This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi everyone, Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening. It's going to be a great show, great week. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We have a lot to discuss. I mean, I know we got, I guess, hundreds of days, 231 days to the election. It feels like it's tomorrow already. A lot to discuss there. And Mark Furman will be on this hour. I haven't spoken to him in a while. He's got a Fox Nation special coming up on the channel. Keep in mind, if you ever have to leave your local affiliate, you can go to our app and listen to it. You also get the podcast. Millions of you are downloading it. And today, we know Bernie Moreno. A lot of people are focusing on what's happening in Ohio. Bernie Moreno was the pick of the president to be the Senate candidate to take on and try to get that seat, into Republican hands. J.D. Vance is going to be with Bernie Moreno today over in Montgomery, Montgomery County over in Ohio. So we'll take a look at that. Matt Dolan's going to be having his a meet and greet over in Dublin, Ohio. So best of luck to whoever wins. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
If President Prime Minister Netanyahu's current coalition remains in power after the war begins to wind down and continues to pursue dangerous and inflammatory policies, then the United States will have no choice but to play a more active role in shaping Israeli policy.
Excuse me? Senator Schumer, picking a prime minister, demanding election in another country? You got to be kidding me. It's blowing up on Chuck. Senator Schumer demands free election, more elections in Israel. Well, it's caused massive backlash, given Hamas leverage in the ceasefire hostage talks. Meanwhile, some in his party look to defend him, but it's indefensible.
Number two.
Do you actually believe a forced sale will happen before November?
It absolutely could. It would be in the financial interest of ByteDance's investors to effectuate a forced sale.
Mike Gallagher making it clear the House gave the Senate the bill, so go pass it or at least vote on it. It's time for the Senate to step up and announce there's a way forward on the Chinese-owned app. Over 170 million Americans have it on their phones. We're going to look at this red-hot issue in America.
Number one.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, 2024 explosive weekend as former President Trump takes to the stump. And turns out it's President Biden who explodes behind the scenes that he's losing to Trump and his aides don't trust him to speak. Their goal, blow up Trump. And guess what? That's exactly what they're doing. So Trump has a huge rally for Bernie Moreno in Ohio, huge crowd. He's ad-libbing most of the things off his prompter. And at which time, at one point, he started talking about the car industry. We all have been reading these stories, I think you would, how China has been rolling off these electric cars very cheaply, and they want to flood the European market, and they want to take advantage of the USMCA and build the cars in Mexico so they can get that so-called Mexican discount in North America. And this is what Trump said in response. Cut three.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line. And you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars.
Right away, everyone starts saying, you know it. Donald Trump was it. Blood in the streets if I don't win. Blood in the streets if I don't win. Not putting into context that Trump is Trump. And he talks like that in severe consequences. But he's talking about bloodbath. Financially, in the auto industry, you think it's bad now? It will get worse. Why is Trump getting so much union support beyond the leadership? Why are the Teamsters still holding out an endorsement, which will eventually go to the Democrat? Why? Because so many union workers see eye to eye to him, especially in the auto industry. And I don't think that they bought into the fact that Joe Biden joined them on a picket line. Therefore, he's got their back. But everybody just went apoplectic with this, that Donald Trump's calling for blood in the streets. The reality is, we know what he meant. Even Mike Pence, who said, I'm not going to endorse Trump. You have to understand that when you come out and say bloodbath, Trump wants violence, you are just wrong. Mike Pence figured that out. Cut four.
I woke up this morning seeing online all the discussion about bloodbath. And as you've just reflected, the president was clearly talking about the impact of imports devastating the American automotive industry.
Was that clear to you? Because it was a little muddled.
I think it was. But look, I want people to know, look, the president and I, it was very clear for 4 years, the president and I have different styles.
And that's why I wanted to roll Mike Pence. And Mike Turner, Senator Mike Rounds, these are not, Trumpers like Jim Jordan. But when asked, as usual, it's back to no matter what they come on for, no matter what committees they're on, whatever committees they chair, the first 20 minutes are always about what a horrible person Trump is. Here's an example. Cut five.
You know, first off, I want to congratulate you, Martha, that you correctly identified that the president's statements concerning bloodbath were about what would happen in the auto industry if actually the Chinese manufacturers who were coming into Mexico were permitted to import into the United States. Of course, I've read the transcript. As you said, I was not at the rally. But it is incredibly important that be accurately portrayed. I think certainly there are statements that he makes that many Americans would not agree with, and many Americans would agree with it.
So listen, I think the Republicans are beginning to get it. You know, he's their nominee, number one. So what? You interviewed, so Mike Rounds, and I have him on later. You know, Senator Mike Rounds wanted Tim Scott. Tim Scott didn't win. He's like, I'm going to endorse a Republican. You know, you have Chip Roy. He wanted Governor DeSantis. Governor DeSantis doesn't win. He's going to endorse Trump. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the story of politics. You think one person's going to win, the other person doesn't. You don't get angry, especially when it's within your own party. Here's the other thing Trump said that's causing some people to take him out of context. Cut six.
If I had prisons that were teeming with MS-13 and all sorts of people that they've got to take care of for the next 50 years, right? Young people, they're in jail for years. If you call them people, I don't know if you call them people. In some cases, they're not people, in my opinion.
Now, I know you are listening to me right now, and you know exactly what he meant. When you have these murderer brothers who come across the border and get fake green cards, kill a woman because she's jogging at the University of Georgia, Lake and Riley. When you have a Hezbollah guy come to the border, say, I've been in Hezbollah, I'm crossing the border, where are you going, New York? I'm going to blow something up. He's saying these subhuman, these mutants come to our country to create havoc. We get that. I'm telling you, Democrats get it too. But you think, now, this is my chance. I'll blow this out of proportion and remind everyone how unhinged Donald Trump is. You're reaching. No one's buying it. We've seen Donald Trump for 40 years, and now we've seen him as a presidential candidate virtually every day since 2015. You know exactly what he meant. You tried to vilify him when he came down the escalator and said, Mexico isn't sending us their best. Whoa, he doesn't like Hispanic people. He got more Hispanic votes than McCain and Romney. I think George Bush, the first time around, the only one to get more, and it looks as though he is winning the Hispanic vote now. If he was interpreted as anti-Hispanic, I believe it would have come out already. So why is this important? Because the strategy has been revealed. The NBC is reporting that during internal discussions, President Biden is pressing aides about parts of his record and highlights in different states. He's looking at his polls, and he's seeing he's trailing in Michigan, trailing in Pennsylvania, trailing in Arizona, trailing in Georgia, but not by 1 or 2 points. In Pennsylvania, it's one. But others, by the most part, 4 points, 3, 4, 5 points. And he's causing him to explode. He said, a second person who's familiar with the matter says, he's surrounded by protective aides who want to minimize the chances of a flub. The 81-year-old has chafed on the restraints that he sees as counter to his natural instincts. A third person familiar with the internal discussion says he has felt cocooned at times, has been eager to get out more, meet with voters face-to-face, and take the fight directly to Trump. Third person, also familiar with the matter, says, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the strategy and the president's private views, there are signs that some within the party are also losing patience with Biden. So the strategy is keep Joe low and blow up Donald Trump. Let Trump talk, and we got him from there. And also change his sneakers. Evidently, if you wear Hoka, you have a less chance of falling. They're concerned about him talking and falling. Can you believe this? The current president of the United States, and then when reviewed under criminal investigation, they said he's too old with a failing memory in order to charge him. That's the president. And for those people who say, well, Donald Trump, it looks bad on him because he's just barely beating him. Not really. Ron DeSantis was losing to Joe Biden in the latest polls. Now, Nikki Haley was up 4 or 5. I like Nikki Haley as a candidate, but part of the reason she's up 4 or 5 because nobody was doing any opposition on her except for Donald Trump, who was doing it in a measured way because he didn't want to elevate his number two. Understood? So that's what I'll talk about. I'm going to come back, and I want to outline TikTok and what we know from here because it's so important to so many people listening. Because I want the Senate to take it up on a vote. And if you're going to vote against it, at least you should understand the difference between Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google, everything. There's a fundamental difference. I'm going to get into it and talk about the 12-page speech of legislation next. And then, of course, we have the volatile situation overseas in the Middle East. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
ByteDance is the 100% owner of TikTok. ByteDance basically has its editor-in-chief, who's also the secretary of the Chinese Communist Party cell, embedded at the highest echelons of the company to control all of its products. And he has been tasked with, quote, making sure all of its products, including TikTok, adhere to correct political direction. And so this is a different type of threat than we've seen before.
So that is why, by the way, he's a Democrat who you're hearing from right there. And he is Raja Krishnamoorthy. And he came out along with Mike Gallagher and said, this has got to stop. And he was so convincing in the legislation. It's all because foreign owned. I'm not telling you the Facebook feed. I'm not talking about the Twitter or Snapchat news. That is an American company. Well, we can regulate here. And whether we choose to or not and get together or not, that's a conversation I'd love to have, but not now. But right now, the reason why TikTok is different, you just heard why. There's already been proof of them manipulating their feed to try to manipulate divisions here in America or promote a candidate that might be easier or better for China, that might not care if Taiwan is taken over or not. Why would you allow it? Case in point. If a Chinese company, if a North Korean company, if a Iranian company, any foreign entity, friend or foe, wants to buy CBS, ABC, or Fox, they are not allowed. Why? Same reason why Arnold Schwarzenegger can't be president. It has to be an American company. So with this whole advent of the digital world and the app stores, they were slow on the trigger. Out rolls in 2016, TikTok. And they have a fantastic algorithm. People love it. I was really briefed on how dangerous it was, so I never downloaded it. People love it. There's a reason why it's number one. It's earned it. But the reason why it's number one and manipulating people is because China designed it to their credit, and China does have Americans on their board, 3 of 5 on the board. I get it. But what they're able to do with the back door, what they're able to do with the front door, is, to me, unacceptable. And that's why you have to get rid of it. Yeah, you have 6 months to sell 80% of it. Here is more from Congressman Krishnamoorthy. I want to say his name slowly. It's got a million consonants. Cut 18.
Their CEO has appeared on Capitol Hill repeatedly and made various misrepresentations, Margaret, that have caused members on both sides to really scratch their heads and vote for this bill. Just two, I'll just point out two very briefly. One is that he claimed that ByteDance China-based employees never had access to American user data, and that was proven to be false. They repeatedly access it, even unbeknownst to TikTok USA employees. And the second misrepresentation is that he said that this data, American user data, was never used against Americans. That was proven false.
And you only think it's going to get worse. And what they want to do is create an uproar and be so popular that a politician in an election year won't go for it. It didn't work in the House. Senate put it on the floor. Josh Hawley, the senator always worried about censorship, said this: the bill, the Senate will nickel and dime it to death by a thousand cuts. Nothing that big tech doesn't want moves across the Senate floor. He is against TikTok. Senator Tom Cotton against TikTok. I was surprised that some senators are not all in for getting rid of TikTok. Let them divest. Here's Senator Bill Cassidy, cut 22.
I'd like to see the final language, but I'm certainly predisposed to vote for it. Anyone that doesn't think that the Chinese Communist Party would like to influence how we think in our country just doesn't understand what they do. They have members of the board of directors. The Chinese Communist Party has members on the board of directors of ByteDance, the parent company of this. And in previous times, the federal government has required the sale of a Chinese social media company over these sorts of national security concerns. And so I think this is consistent with what we've done in the past, and by and large, I support it.
So evidently, we've done this before. Did not know it. Grindr was a Chinese app, and they said sell it, and they did. I'm not really privy to this Grindr. Heard about it. Did not know that went down. So that educated me. Karen Swisher, hardly a right-wing zealot, a journalist and author of Burn Book, knows as much about tech as anybody and knows the personalities behind it. And just wanted to clarify why it's different to the former president of the United States than Meta, than Twitter. Cut 23.
I don't trust any of them, but I particularly don't trust a Chinese-owned company. That's all. I had it on a burner phone. I wrote a column in the New York Times about 4 or 5 years ago about it. I think it's an exciting app. I think it's a broadcast network. It's obviously entertainment. And it does it really well. I just feel like every Chinese company I've covered has had the tentacles of the Chinese Communist Party involved in it, whether they like it or not. You know, in the case of some of them, they don't like it, but that's the case. Now, that's not to be said there's not issues with every single U.S.-based company, Meta and Alphabet. But this is a very different step level as far as I'm concerned. And this is a foreign adversary, and it's very different. A Chinese-owned company would not be able to own CBS. And I consider this is a media company.
It's who it is. It's a media company. So I sympathize for people who make money from TikTok and are able to do it. I see these image ads. They're on our channel too, Fox News channel. But they're playing the game. They want to make it seem invaluable. But the downside is too great. There's no upside. I mean, fentanyl, they're trying to kill us with fentanyl and manipulate us with TikTok. And for those people who say, well, that's a sacrifice, you have generations who sacrificed their lives for this country. We're asking you to possibly, if they don't sell, delete an app. You should do it. When we come back, Mark Furman, we talk about crime, punishment, or lack thereof. And we talk about a special that he has coming up on Fox Nation, one of my favorite apps. And by the way, tomorrow night, I'm going to be hosting a show, 5 p.m., on Afghanistan, the pullout, a full investigation. Got a great panel together. So we'll be able to do that. I'll be able to go over that and talk about some of the impact it's had and why there was nobody fired or even reprimanded for that horrendous day in American history. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. Calls in 10.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today, and I think there's no hotter issue, maybe immigration overall, than crime and punishment. And who better to talk about it than Mark Furman, Fox News contributor and former detective at the LAPD. He's got a Fox Nation special coming out on suspected murderer Brian Koberger. We have to say suspected. We pretty much know the Moscow, Idaho killer of those college kids. Mark, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Brian.
So, Mark, first off, overall, before we get to the case, this is the most predictable problem we're in right now. When we start defunding the police, defaming the police, when we start getting rid of no cash bail, bail reform, right to shelter, and then we start telling cops, we have an eye on you. If you ever misstep, you're going to be going to jail or you're going to be stripped and you're going to be sued. We now have a situation where almost every major city is dealing with crime issues. The least surprising outcome, right?
Well, when you look at it, you have to look at it, from the societal view, what's going on. But then you really have to look at what are the cops thinking? Well, now they realize there's a problem, and a lot of these cities are saying, no, we want you to be more proactive. I'm going to tell you, they don't trust you. Because city managers and mayors and supervisors are going to change, and you're committed to something. And then when they decide to change, it's usually one of those moments where something hits the national media. They don't trust it. There's a point where you can never go back to a city that has got strong law enforcement and they have safe streets, because what do you do with all the people that you've allowed to become problems over the last decade?
So we're about 6,000 or 7,000 cops down in New York. We have in Chicago is ridiculously low. In New Orleans, for example, no one even bothers calling 911 anymore. So I don't know any city outside the state of Florida that is able to fulfill their quota when it comes to a police force. Do you ever remember something like this?
No, I don't. But I do remember little dips when there was problems recruiting. But there was always something that you could solve. There was something going on. The governor was not funding large departments, or there was some issue in society that actually evened out. But the problem that you have now is, why would somebody go into law enforcement when they know, one, it's okay to hate you, spit on you, call you names, shoot at you, and then you have agencies that are, this is something you hear on the media, crime's down. You hear the Biden administration, the crime is down. You hear people from these large cities, crime's down. Do you know how it goes down? What they do is they change how you respond to crimes. We're not going to show up for a burglary report. You have to actually call it in. The police don't show up. The police don't discover crime. So what you're doing is you're reducing crime by not showing up or not taking the reports. It's not that crime is down. It's out of control.
And by the way, not many people living in these cities or any area need to look at the statistics to find out if crime is down. It's what your neighbors are telling you, how you feel when you leave, what you sense with your kids when you talk to the other parents in the area. So no one looks at the latest Gallup poll on crime when it's where you live. So I'll give you an example. What they try to do in New York City, they have a rise in subway crime. So this governor says, even though the numbers are down, to make you feel better, which is so insulting, we're going to put the National Guard in the subways. But they have no training in the National Guard. They can't carry weapons. They're not allowed to carry their rifles because it makes people uncomfortable. So they don't know how to do it. Just because you're a cop doesn't mean you had to do everything in every facet. So they're sitting there in their camouflage and people walk by them. And still, while hell's breaking loose, on Thursday, we see a situation where a guy walks on, just starts fighting another guy. A woman thinks this guy's in trouble, stabs him in the back to help him. And then the guy whips out a gun, goes to shoot the guy he was beating up for no reason anyway. And the guy gets the gun away from him and shoots him in the head. This is all going on while the train is moving.
Well, not only while the train's moving, while somebody, probably multiple people, are filming it. You know, it's interesting what you bring up, Brian. We are allowing criminals to actually fester and then expose themselves, and then they realize that there's nothing's going to happen. Look at the subway system. So you have the National Guard there. What is their rules of engagement? They are not trained to handle low-level force. They don't have a taser, a baton. They don't have training in actually how to subdue somebody with control holds. They don't know how to handcuff somebody. So it's kind of like, we're going to introduce this, and this can only go badly. So if somebody pulls a gun out, then they're going to take an M4 and actually light somebody up in a subway. It's ridiculous.
So,
but
yeah, go ahead.
We want, you know, I'm doing a Fox Nation series of specials on Brian Koberger. And how did Brian Koberger actually, how was he created? Well, I would probably say he was created by the allowance and the internet and cell phones and the fantasy that nobody ever said, you need some help. You're weird. You're strange, because strange and being on the outside is almost cool in our society now. And then we wonder why everything happens.
Here's a cut. Here's a cut from your special. Cut three.
For 7 weeks, the town of Moscow, Idaho, remained on high alert.
The Moscow, Idaho killer who slaughtered these four students in the prime of their lives is out there somewhere at this hour.
Students are facing imminent fear right now and are fleeing campus because of that.
This type of person is actually born.
Although police say they have quite a lot of evidence against him, he remains confident that he's going to be exonerated.
He definitely had an ego and wanted to wield that.
One of the basic tenets of an antisocial personality is lying and deception.
Does anybody think this wasn't his first murder?
So what you find when you look at him is this guy was trying to be a profiler, right? He was in school to learn how to do this.
Yeah, he was trying to get a doctorate in criminal justice, criminal psychology. The idea is that this is what interested him as a person. But when you look at, you know, his life, you see that this kid's a little off center. There's a few things wrong, and I'm sure it's going to eventually come out with his parents exactly and his friends exactly, you know, how he grew up and the things that kind of, you know, how these school shooters, they always say, well, I kind of suspected and I kind of knew. And, you know, in retrospect, we always can do that, and everybody's saying, well, yeah, that was a little weird, but nobody steps up to the plate. And it's kind of the Brian Koberger is the old thing is was he born or was he created? And I'm sure that there's a combination that we'll never be able to have the formula to. But when you look at the Brian Koberger as a suspect and the four victims in Moscow, Idaho, this is the absolute innocence with the absolute evil attached, killing four people with a large knife in close quarters that he has no connection with. There's no bullying. There's no relationship. There's nothing. So this is some unbelievable amount
of evil,
mental sickness. But then he projects himself as a budding professor at Washington State University. It's just so... It's like a perfect storm to observe how you can create a person like this. But people are kind of not brushing it off, but they almost are not seeing him for what he is.
So the thing is, Mark Furman, on top of that, we did have a parents charge after a school shooting because they missed so many signs and seemed to ignore the kid. They looked at his journal and he said, I wish my parents would get me help. I keep asking for help. Now his parents are going to jail. Is this a new trend? And do you think Koberger's parents to a degree are culpable?
Well, see, they have not come forward and said a word, but you know, somebody doesn't have to be responsible for a murder to actually care about another person, especially somebody they're related to. This person needs help. This person's saying weird things. I need to seek something out. Every school shooter Family and friends. Yeah, there was something going on there. Yeah. So these parents of this one school shooter went to jail because not only do they know the kid had a problem, they buy him a gun.
That's key.
That is the nexus that actually put them in jail.
Mark,
it's not that somebody said something. That's the key.
Now, so Mark, where do we get, when's this going to be ready? Is it dropping today?
It is dropping today. Three episodes on Fox Nation. They're Savage Instincts, Mind of a Killer, Behind Bars, and Digital Shadows. Really, Digital Shadows might interest a lot of people. Just how did this person actually contact victims? Could you be a victim that somebody is actually talking to, the suspect? And then how does all that technology catch a guy like this? So there's a lot of interesting stuff behind the scenes and a lot of things about the trial and when it's going to happen. Will he be convicted? Will he get the death penalty? Will they execute him? A lot of experts, a lot of opinions.
So before we go, the place you used to go home, California, crime's getting so bad there, especially in Oakland. Business leaders are getting together. They say if they don't get some security, they're going to stop paying taxes. Listen.
We're scared of our lives now. Diamond District's not the same as back in the years that I had been working. We're really struggling. Sales have dropped 20%.
And office and off, we're frustrated. So we're not going to pay taxes to the city until they give us what we want.
I feel like we need to start somewhere. I mean, it's ridiculous. It seems like it's getting worse.
They're desperate. They're not. It's not like looking to save money. They're looking. They're trying to get people's attention. Will this be effective?
No. Well, look, Brian. Look at what everybody has done. You either don't enforce drug laws or you legalize drugs. You allow people to set up a camp on the sidewalk. You enforce nothing. You have businesses that are running away from inner cities. You're allowing crime. You tell the police, don't enforce this. You can't do anything. You empower people. Now, if you want to actually clean it up, what do you do with these thousands of people that you have actually created that think they're going to get money, they get to use drugs, and they get to camp on the street? What are you going to do with them? This is where I just kind of laugh about this situation. You wanted it this way. You got it. How do you like it? Well, they don't. But now what do you do about it? You can't get police. You can't recruit them. You treat them like crap. And then you wonder why everything happened as it did. How are we going to solve it? Well, you've got a people problem. You've created criminals. You don't keep them in jail. You allow them to get out. You allow them to shoot drugs right on the street. When you got kids, you know, getting picked up at the bus stop, you could have somebody shooting dope right there. Nobody cares. Now you got to clean it up. Good luck on that. I don't know what you're going to do with all these people. Are you going to incarcerate them? Are you going to clean them up? Are you going to give them a job? You're already giving them money. You're already letting them shoot dope. To me, it's an insurmountable metropolitan area that they're not going to solve.
I'll tell you what, it's all a self-inflicted wound. It's not like you know, there are certain things that happen in life and society changes and you're a little slow. No, they created this. And they laid the groundwork when they wanted social workers instead of cops in 2020. And now you have neither. Mark, thanks so much.
You bet, Brian. Nice talking to you.
Same here. Go to Fox Nation and check out his special. Not only does he know police work, but he's a great presenter. All right, listen, I have a few minutes on the other half. 1-866-408-7669. Talk about 2024, what they're trying to do with President's remarks over the weekend. We also got to talk about TikTok. You don't have to agree with me. But no question about it, in my view, our national security at risk as long as this app stays ready to use. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I think Schumer's statements are wholly inappropriate. I think we're not a banana republic. The people of Israel will choose when they'll have elections, who they'll elect, and it's not something that will be foisted upon us. You know, it's wrong to try to replace the elected leaders of a sister democracy and a staunch American ally at any time, but especially during the time of war.
Absolutely, 100%. Here we are at day 164, and they're close. They have wiped out 18 of 24 battalions of Hamas. And now there's pressure from this administration because they're losing Arabic Muslim votes, Palestinian votes. And now we have Senator Schumer, the highest ranking Jewish politician in American history, calling for elections in another country. It would be astounding how nuts everyone would go if Donald Trump called for that. Totally inappropriate. And Benny Gantz, who would probably benefit from elections, said you never should have done that. The president said it was a good speech. He echoes the feelings of a lot of people. All right. So it's good to ask for an exchange. You like Macron? What if President Trump just goes, you know, Macron's giving me a hard time. I'm calling on the people of France to have a new election. Why not? Crazy. Here's what Trump said about that to Howie on Media Buzz. Cut 31.
Well, they lost a lot of people on October 7th, too. People have to remember that.
Oh, you know, people should never forget.
They've totally, well, I think maybe he's forgotten it. He doesn't forget it. He looks at where do I get more votes? And I guess he's seeing, you know, the Palestinians and he's seeing the marches and they are big. And he says, I want to go that way instead of Israel. I don't know how Israel stays with these people. I just don't know.
And that's always dumbfounded the president. He does not understand the American Jewish vote going to Democrats, him or anybody else. Joe Lieberman, a former Democrat, cut 29.
I thought the statement he made this week, which obviously he has a right to make, but I thought it was a mistake. And I can't ever remember anything like it for a U.S. senator, let alone a majority, let alone the highest ranking Jewish elected official in Washington, to tell the Israelis that it's time to get rid of Netanyahu. That's outrageous.
It is outrageous. So what has he done? In doing that, you're worried about votes. You're worried about the protests in front of your apartment every day. But you know you should be more worried about giving Hamas more leverage. They are evil. They are the problem. 80% of the Palestinian people agree with Hamas or they're threatened. I'm not sure. Maybe they do. And now I don't feel good about the suffering going on there. But just know the people that keep on saying 30,000, those are Hamas numbers. Hamas doesn't even acknowledge any of their fighters are dead when they've lost thousands of their fighters. So now they are going to hold out to get more prisoners exchanged for hostages, demand a complete ceasefire, not a temporary pause, none of which Israel will agree to. But the president came out and said Rafah is a red line. The last city is a red line. I have news for you. Every time you show division, you make it harder on the hostages, Mr. President.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're a national show. We are heard around the world. So Michael Goodwin's going to be with us in a matter of moments. Tom Caracco is going to be with us shortly, too. Senior fellow at the International Security Program. Grace Handel on international relations. And, man, do we have a lot of challenges around the globe, too. And I think that it looks like there might be some funding coming down the pike for Ukraine, thank goodness. It looks like the speaker's going to put it up, knowing he needs Democratic votes, and Democrats want to vote for it. So I think that'll be good news to try to help out that country. We'll talk about that and what it means because there were elections. Vladimir Putin wins overwhelmingly. But believe it or not, he also has popularity in that country. So before we get to Michael Goodwin, who spent substantial time with President Trump, wrote an article about it. Let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
If Prime Minister Netanyahu's current coalition remains in power after the war begins to wind down and continues to pursue dangerous and inflammatory policies, then the United States will have no choice but to play a more active role in shaping Israeli policy.
Really? We're going to start shaping Israeli policy? I think we got our hands full here, don't you think? Blowing up on Chuck. Senator Schumer's demand for elections in Israel blows up in his face, embarrasses his party if they're capable of that. To me, it's a flat-out election ploy because he's bleeding Muslims, Arabic, and Palestinian voters.
Number two.
Do you actually believe a forced sale will happen before November?
It absolutely could. It would be in the financial interest of ByteDance's investors to effectuate a forced sale.
That is Mike Gallagher. TikTok, time for the Senate to step up and announce there's a way forward on the Chinese-owned app. If you want to keep it, sell most of it. 170 million Americans would like to keep using it, but should be denied using it if they don't sell in 6 months.
Number one.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected... Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Right. On automobiles, cars, right? 2024, explosive weekend as former President Trump takes to the stump. And turns out it's President Biden who explodes behind the scenes as they say he's losing it because he's losing to Donald Trump. We'll talk about the latest blow up on a Trump speech. Michael Goodwin joins us now, New York Post columnist. Hey, Michael.
Good morning, Brian.
So you got yourself down to Mar-a-Lago. You've known President Trump as a politician, the host of The Apprentice, a boxing promoter, and now you have him trying to get back that job. What was the President Trump you found?
Well, look, Brian, I think that Donald Trump is pretty consistent. He's not a different person in person than he is publicly. He is who he is, and he knows who he is. And he, in my estimation, does not try to be somebody else. He's not trying to curry favor by pretending to be something he's not. And so when I interviewed him at Mar-a-Lago, it was a continuation, in my view, of the interviews I've done with him in the past. Of course, the subject matter changes, but you can ask just about anything. And, you know, he doesn't take offense. He just answers the best he can. You know, like all politicians, he sometimes talks in circles, and you have to bring him back. And, you know, he's going to answer the question he wants to answer, not necessarily the one you asked. But that's typical of most politicians. And, look, the point of the interview was here we are now. He has secured the nomination, the delegates to win the nomination for the third consecutive time, the first in Republican Party history, and it's now the fall. He and Biden happened to win the sufficient delegates on the same day of their parties. So the fall election is set as far as we can see. He does not think Biden will be replaced. He doesn't see any reason why Biden won't be the nominee. But I think on a big picture, Brian, the issue for him that I wrote about, that I asked him about consistently, is this, can people give you a second chance? Can you get a second look from a lot of people who have voted against you, who swear they will never vote for you? Now, look, obviously you're never going to get 100%, but the independent voters who will make make the differences in the swing states, can you get them to reconsider you? And I'm not sure how far he's going to go in that regard. I think he would like, of course, he wants to win, but he also wants to win on his own terms. And I'm not sure that that right now he's thinking about I get those people who have turned their backs on me. I'm not sure what he sees in them. I'm not sure if he thinks that Biden is so bad that therefore these people will, out of good common sense, come to my side. I think.
Well, the thing is, he's got with the court cases, he's talking about his own personal freedom and his economic welfare. If he loses, he's in a lot of trouble, judging by these four cases. You know, he could delay it, and it looks like he's going to delay it effectively. But if he loses, he'll have a double loss. And I think that should give him additional motivation to be a little bit more disciplined. Listen to what ABC's political director Rick Klein said. Cut nine.
Consistently in polling, we've seen about 19-20%, one in five Americans who say they don't like either one of these two men who are running. So that can mean a couple of different things. Some of them are Democrats, some of them Republicans, some of them may come home. Some of them are going to flirt with third-party candidacies, whether it's No Labels or RFK Jr.
So, I mean, he knows he's up right now. Did you think that he was carrying with him the weight of these cases, too?
Well, it was interesting. You know, in our interview, he sort of, yes, I mean, obviously the cases matter to him. And you know, I mean, every day there's something in one of the cases, or if not two. So they're clearly a great burden on him. But at the same time, he said it's become almost normal. It's become sort of part of his daily routine now, which I found sort of breathtaking when you think, as you pointed out, Brian, the stakes involved. I mean, whether it's the financial stakes of the New York case, whether it's the possibility of conviction and even imprisonment in several of the other cases. Then there's, while we were, that week, the Fannie Willis thing was blowing up. So there's something everywhere. The thing that struck me about all that, he's very clear-eyed in the sense that he believes all of these cases are coming from the White House, that all of them somehow trace back to the Biden administration interfering with the election because as he said, and I quoted him, this is the only way Biden thinks he can win. And when you put it in those terms, if you just consider the possibility that this is true, that all these cases have their roots in the White House, and that it is all part of a plan for Biden to win. That's an extraordinary possibility. And you can't say there's no evidence of that. I mean, the Georgia prosecutors were in the White House. We know Letitia James is a big part of the Attorneys General Association and very political. So you could go down the line. Certainly Jack Smith is a headhunter appointed by Merrick Garland after President Biden said he wanted Trump prosecuted. I mean, you cannot ignore these things. And then you can not on the other side say, well, Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. Wait a minute. Who's the threat to democracy here?
So, let's talk about the New York case. The president, we know this. It was a dead case. And all of a sudden, they brought it back to life. Alvin Bragg brought it to life. And the president brought up exactly Biden's role. Listen to who he named. They put someone from Justice into the New York office. And next thing you know, they have an indictment. Cut 42.
Well, they seem to have taken on a life of their own in terms of the populace, in terms of the American people. They know they're rigged. They know they're all Biden cases. These aren't cases. These are Biden indictments. This is using the Justice Department to go after your political opponent. The Manhattan DA has a man named Colangelo in there. He was Merrick Garland's top person. They put him into the Manhattan DA's office. Fannie Willis and her lover spent a lot of time in Washington talking about my case. That came out during the hearings, talking about my case. The AG of New York, Letitia James, deals with Washington all the time. Now, even the local cases, like a DA case, it's all trying to hurt an opponent. And why didn't they do this years ago?
Yeah, why didn't they do it years ago? And now we're in a delay in New York. We're a delay in the documents case because there's some petitions that the Trump team is putting forward. We're in a delay on everything with the January 6th case because the president says, I think I'm immune. I was president of the United States at that point. So the Supreme Court said, we're going to look at it. We're going to hear both sides in May, and we'll decide at the end of June. So then they're going to have to get ramped up on whatever new information. So this thing could go all the way to the fall. And do you think this country will tolerate a trial of a leading candidate representing the Republican Party who most likely will be leading at that time? You think they're going to tolerate Jack Smith putting him in court for 3 weeks?
You know, Brian, we shall see. But I would point you back to something you said at the opening about Chuck Schumer and the his attack on Israel in order to win the Muslim American vote in America. This, to me, is an extraordinary degree, an example of how far the Democrats will go to win. There are no limits with them right now. They will do whatever it takes to win. And so I tend to believe that Trump is right. We know he's right about the Fannie Willis case and all of these others. And Jack
and the
Smith,
reason why you
Merrick
know this
because
Nathan Wade met twice with White House officials in Athens, Georgia. I mean, how do we know that? Because he billed for it. He put an invoice in there. So the guy, so the lead prosecutor who specializes in wills and car accidents, because he's dating Fannie Willis, gets $700,000 and then gets all his expenses taken care of. As he, why would he have to meet with White House law officials?
Well, and there's also, I believe it's an email of Fannie Willis herself writing to the White House about needing some time and guidance. So there's no question that there's coordination in some of these, if not all of these cases. And so to your question of will the public tolerate it, I'm afraid at least half of the public is cheering it on, and the other half is not sure. And that is the Democrats' strength. They're unified in wanting to win. They are unified in
coming
together when it matters most.
How about
and
a strategy?
That's what the Republicans don't have yet.
So, and I'll play it next. We don't have time now, but you know they're going to try. What they're going to try to do is sock Joe away. They will not let him speak, and he's very frustrated by it. There's an NBC report out that he's blown his stack as early as January, saying, "Why am I not allowed out more? Why am I in a cocoon? Why can't I get out?" You know what their strategy is? Keep Joe low and go after Trump. Draw Trump out. He'll find something controversial to say and remind people how what those Trump years were like. That's what that's their strategy. That's their game plan. Because it looks like the Trump trials are not doing what they were supposed to do. Instead, they're giving him, you know, they're putting a jetpack on his candidacy.
Absolutely. And again, that's why I point to the Schumer thing, right? Biden doesn't have to give that speech. Schumer gives it, right? So everything in some way is coordinated toward this. Let's, as you say, keep Biden in the basement again. And, I mean, think about it. A president complaining that he's not allowed to talk to the public.
Crazy.
It's unheard of. We've never heard of such a thing. And yet, it's a story, it passes, and they go on because they are oblivious to the criticism because the mainstream media protects them. They don't have to worry about the New York Times or the Washington Post blowing their cover. They only they know they have 50-75% of the media, and therefore they're secure from the kind of criticism that would get to their voter base.
I hear you, Mike. Just to go full circle, one of the reasons why Paul Manafort was fired after just about 6 weeks as campaign manager, he decided that Donald Trump was doing too many interviews and told him. And Trump said, let's get rid of this guy. And that was the beginning of Paul Manafort's end. But now Paul Manafort, ironically, could be coming back, and the president's going to ask him to be a consultant for the Republican National Convention to get some sponsors in there. So it's so weird. But, Michael, we're back in the thick of things. Great job on your column. Talks about the quality time you spent with the former president of the United States. MGoodwin_NYPost. Thanks, Michael.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. We'll come back, and we'll take some of your calls and emails. BrianKilmeade.com, and just click on comments. Will come to me. Don't move.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Do you actually believe a forced sale will happen before November?
It absolutely could. It would be in the financial interest of ByteDance's investors to effectuate a forced sale. I think the user experience on the app would improve, and you wouldn't have this concern over being propagandized, the opaque algorithm influencing what information you see, that would go away. So I imagine it would actually increase in value. And I think all the more reason why we have to tackle this now. The closer we get to an election, the risk just gets greater and greater.
Yeah, it would be. Meanwhile, the President Biden says, I'll sign if it gets to me. Meanwhile, I'm going to, instead of doing a Super Bowl interview, open up an account and go on it and have some ridiculous answers to Jason Kelsey questions or Kelsey family questions. So I got an email from Richard. He says, to the TikTok bill, it contains a clause that would enable the president to allege foreign ownership of apps and other things. Not good. In Truth Social, controlled by Putin, Biden could allege the example Republicans may come to regret it. No, it's actually ownership advantage. It's not a matter of paperwork. No, Putin, Vladimir Putin's never going to buy Truth Social. It might be bought by another American company, but they know. If Truth Social is a news source, don't expect to be a factor in America. And that's just it. That's why when Truth Social sold to his parent company, it's going to bring about $4 billion to Trump, but he's going to be able to trust it. That's going to be key. He'll be able to trust it. So that's why this thing has got to be up for debate on the Senate floor. So it's worth reading 12 pages. It's very straightforward. It's not written for a lawyer. It's written for us to read and understand. And it's not a big mystery. The problem with TikTok, the only problem with TikTok, that is it, is it's Chinese, it's foreign-owned. And China is listed, should be listed, as a enemy nation. Rival, enemy, whatever, enemy nation. It's not France, it's not England, it's not Israel, enemy nation. And if you're a foreign entity, you can't have a broadcast network. This is like a broadcast network. You cannot buy CBS, even if you have all the money in the world, KSM over in Saudi Arabia. Can't do it. Schwarzenegger can't be president. These are just the rules.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
When people tell us don't go into Rafah, that's like telling the Allies, listen, don't go into Berlin, leave a quarter of the Nazi army intact. You know, that's ridiculous. You know, if we leave a quarter of the Hamas fighting terrorist battalions in place, they'll regroup, reconquer Gaza, and in fact, perpetrate once again what they vowed to do, which is to repeat the October 7th massacre over and over and over again. That's not going to happen. So we need total victory over Hamas. We're within reach. We should do it. We're going to do it while we enable the civilian population in Rafah to leave, as we've done up to now. But we have to finish the job.
And that, where does the hostage talks figure into all that talk, along with the president last week saying the red line is going into Rafah? Tried to walk back to Admiral Kirby over the weekend, but I don't know what they're doing. Tom Carrico joins us now, senior fellow with the International Security Program and director of the Missile Defense Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Tom, welcome back. How do you feel about the policy that the prime minister is putting forward, despite the turbulence?
Yes, it certainly is some turbulence, but I think the message that you just quoted there in terms of finishing the job, I think that is completely rational. You know, I think there are some legitimate concerns that are being raised. There's concerns raised in every conflict about the use of force and things like that. But no, the strategic objective of getting rid of Hamas once and for all has to be the right solution. Of course, there's big trade-offs, very hard choices that are facing Israel, especially in terms of the hostages, those that presumably are still alive. But that strategic objective of eliminating Hamas, which they articulated right after the October 7 attacks, which are, you know, getting further and further away in the rearview mirror. But again, I think that's the right approach.
So right now they say there's 30,000 casualties over there, but in many respects it doesn't seem to make much sense, because we don't know. They never admit that they have any casualties of Hamas, of fighters. But yet we know 18 of 24 Hamas fighter of their battalions have been destroyed. And most of the ones that are left are in Rafah. But the problem is 1.2 million people there. Do you need to supply a corridor to get them out? And can you make sure that Hamas fighters don't leave with them?
Sure. And that is a thorny problem. That is going to be very difficult in terms of getting people to leave. It's also, conversely, you know, been a question of getting aid in of various kinds. You saw the United States create a beachhead to deliver some stuff. You've seen some airdrops going on. The challenge there, for instance, is trucks coming in are being attacked by Hamas. And then likewise, the material being stolen and that sort of thing. So it's a very difficult situation. It's a very tragic situation. But none of that, I think, affects right. or negates, rather, the strategic objective that has to be the elimination of Hamas.
So listen to what John Kirby said about what you just said. Cut 35.
We have been watching this very closely, and we haven't seen evidence that Hamas has pilfered off a lot of the humanitarian assistance in a nefarious way. Nobody's making excuses for them or what they've done to Gaza and the Gazan people and how they put the Gazan people at risk or how they certainly put the Israeli people at risk. Not at all, but there are other organizations that are doing that.
So he says he has no evidence of that. People on the ground see a different story. The IDF has certainly reported a different story.
Yeah, it's possible that the leopard is changing its spots, but the years and years of appropriating all kinds of aid that have fueled the fortress Hamas in Gaza in the first place. So I count me a little skeptical on that.
Yeah, I want you to hear just when it comes to casualties. Abraham Weiner was on with Mark Levin over the weekend, the University of Pennsylvania professor of statistics and data science. Just about these casualty numbers Hamas is spitting out. Cut 39.
What I was able to do was go and find a section of daily reported casualty numbers broken up into children and women and totals. And there I was able to derive the male total from that and see whether or not there was evidence in this data that something wasn't right about it. So I already knew that there wasn't something not right about it because there's just too many well, I should say the real issue is there's just not enough men dying, and they had to be there somewhere. So I was looking in the data to find something that didn't make any sense.
So the men dying would be, in theory, 70% of the 30,000 were women and children, they say, but they weren't acknowledging that men were dying.
Yeah, I think another piece of that story, that the reporting around that, is the peculiar, extremely steady rate at which new numbers were being added. Almost a straight line over time, which, of course, raises the question of the veracity of the reports. I think the quote that you had from him about that kind of further confirms that, can we take this for granted? Can we believe it? I think the answer is, back to the leopard changing his spots, of course, it would make sense that to assume that Hamas is putting out disinformation.
All right, so let's fast forward over. Let's go quickly over to Ukraine, where it looks like there might be a standalone bill offered to fund Ukraine. Here's what Chairman Michael McCaul said, cut 41.
Well, the speaker indicated he's committed to getting this done. I've been working with the appropriate authorizers and appropriators. There are things we can do to make this bill better. For instance, the Repo Act, which I passed out of my committee, allows us to attach to the Russian sovereign assets that have been frozen to help pay for Russia's war crimes. I think most Americans agree with that concept. Also, the loan program to provide for the direct government assistance to Ukraine. It's non, no interest, waivable, but it's symbolic that it is a loan program. Finally, a strategy, and we got to put these attackums in, the long-range artillery, to hit the bridge between Russia and Crimea.
You give them the weapons, they'll push back. How do you gauge what we might be prepared to do?
Look, I think provided, this is an important caveat, but provided that we are not adversely impairing other combatant commands in the Pacific or other places in terms of attackers, for instance, some relatively modest number of even the longer range ones would, of course, be very helpful. Continuing to hemorrhage and just keep this thing going on, it needs to have a punctuation here. The Ukrainians need to win, whether it's going after the bridge or what have you. That's another reason, for instance, why the recent reporting about the Germans not sending the Taurus missiles is also a disappointment, because that longer range capability, the big warheads, is going to be helpful to hit some key things.
What's their reasoning? What's their reasoning for not sending it?
I think fundamentally they want to. They don't want the Russians to dislike them that much. They want to. The Germans have had an economic relationship. I hate to say that. The Germans have stepped up in recent months and in the past year relative to where they were before. But there's a political opposition, and I think it's kind of a fear of the Russian response to that, be it economic or otherwise.
Unbelievable. Meanwhile, Congressman, let's switch to TikTok. Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, along with Mike Gallagher, have gotten a bill together that had over 300 votes in the House, now will be in the Senate, to ban TikTok in 6 months if they don't sell the majority stake, 80%. Here's what he says people should know when they claim First Amendment or Fifth Amendment. Cut 16.
ByteDance is the 100% owner of TikTok. ByteDance basically has its editor-in-chief, who's also the secretary of the Chinese Communist Party cell, embedded at the highest echelons of the company to control all of its products. And he has been tasked with, quote, making sure all of its products, including TikTok, adhere to correct political direction. And so this is a different type of threat than we've seen before.
So do you understand where they're coming from? I'm all for this future ban if they don't sell it. How about you?
No, absolutely. This is not a free speech issue. Folks can continue to go on and say whatever they want on whatever platform. This is a foreign policy issue in terms of a foreign power, in this case, one that is adverse to U.S. interests, that is doing things adverse to the American people. And if you have TikTok on your phone, you should take it off. They've got 100 million censors. China has basically, 100 million censors willingly being spied upon by having this kind of thing on their phone. So, yes, it's bad. Good for Gallagher and everybody else for putting this together. This is probably going to be the first of many such things. It's not just about apps. It's about foreign ownership of things more broadly.
All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Tom Carrico, okay. Thanks so much for your insight. We just span around the globe the challenges we all face. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to take some phone calls at 1-866-408-7669. Just a quick reminder, coming up on April 27th, I'm going to be in beautiful Henderson, Nevada, right outside Las Vegas, Nevada, doing History, Liberty, and Laughs. I have a chance to talk about all my books. I have a patriotic, inspirational, informational stage show where we bring great moments in history to life in a great theatrical way. So go to BrianKilmeade.com and get some tickets to VIP opportunities, too. This way I can meet with you before the show and answer all your questions in a smaller setting. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's so much to get into. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to simply say this. Trump is kicking the Democrats, you know what. 91 charges. 4 indictments, 91 counts against him. He's been impeached twice. And he still ran away with the GOP nomination. It was a cakewalk. You can't touch him. And now he's throwing this salvo. He said, yo, why don't you come beat me? Stop engaging in lawfare and using the legal system to push your political agenda. Come beat me. That's what he did. I do sports most of the time. That's the kind of language we want to hear, ain't it?
So I just thought that was important for Stephen A. Smith. Just weighed in on this. And I don't think he's voting for Trump, but I think he appreciates, and a lot of people appreciate, this is so over the top, the legal cases against him, that people are starting to say this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. When you see that clown show in Georgia, when you see this total blowhard Alvin Bragg and Letitia James, what they're doing, this ridiculous left-wing act they're doing in New York, and Jack Smith seems motivated on one thing, just go for a conviction, don't go for justice. And he's being held up on 2 separate counts. And then you see the documents case. The documents case, okay, Hillary Clinton, when pressed, her IT guy smashes the server. She smashes everything that she has. And they never give over, they never even go over the hard drives. They give over just paper for all her using her private server and her documents case, the stuff that she took back. And then you have a situation with Joe Biden. If you read that report, you see he's done similar things for 40 years. I don't think all three of them made huge mistakes. Only one of them is being charged. And that's what the average person's doing. So Stephen A. Smith, who is all over sports, has a podcast that talks about everything, has just noticed, my goodness, you really don't want to play. It's like taking the hosting a team and making sure they don't show up to the game, whether you take the air out of their tires on the bus, or you double book the driver and don't let them pull out, or there's a problem with the plane. You don't want them to show up. And what it's so become so obvious is you don't want to. Joe Biden does not want to compete with Donald Trump. And nobody can believe that people want to vote for Donald Trump. Stephen, listen on WABC in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Steve.
Hi. I've been waiting to hear someone comment on the Biden and Schumer quid pro quo. Chuck Schumer's always had presidential aspirations, but he can't be elected because he's of Jewish origins and the United States is not ready for it. The timing is amazingly interesting. I think that Schumer may be the vice presidential candidate. He said not a word concerning Israel since October, but 2 days after last week's Super Tuesday primaries were concluded and Biden had all the Democratic delegates he needed, there's been no announcement. 2 days passed after that, and then Schumer's speech, and then Biden the next day, Friday, said he approved of that. So I'm just bringing to the attention that It's very likely Schumer is right now the majority Senate leader. But that makes him about number five in the ranking order.
See, first off, I've never heard Chuck Schumer say he's got presidential ambitions. Number two is, I think if you are an American, if you're Jewish in America and you're a real good candidate, I think you could easily get elected. There's no question about it. And number three is Chuck Schumer is absolutely 100% right. He's doing it for political reasons. He has no problem throwing Israel under the bus because he thinks Joe Biden needs Muslim votes. So I just have almost no respect for him for that. He has gotten so much pushback around the country. And guess what? Benny Gantz gets hurt by this. This just like they do with Trump. When you go out and have an outside source try to blow up your country, that makes you rally around that person. Like they did against George Bush after 9/11. They go, wait, America is trying to tell us when to have elections? People have pride. And I think Chuck Schumer... Now he has a bunch of people like Nancy Pelosi try to pretend as if it made sense to do what he did. Send people like Joe Lieberman, get it. Former Democrat, knows him for 30 years, said that was absolutely wrong. There's no way he'll be in number two. Alex in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. I agree. Chuck Schumer is not going to be the nominee. He will not be the VP pick either. I think they're going to put somebody else in, and if they've been – dealing with this primary in the most undemocratic way, not letting anybody run against Joe Biden, treating the small candidates that ran against him unfairly. But I wanted to comment about TikTok, and I wanted to ask you if this is a fair concern. If we're not fully banning it, but forcing ByteDance to sell it to an American, and how do we know that that American company that buys off TikTok will cut all ties with China? We have Hollywood's in bed with China. We have different sports, companies that are ties with China.
Alex, you're good to be wary, but that's why you got to get tech experts involved, cyber tech experts that we all agree on. They'll go in there and listen. Grindr, they said, is the template for this. They decided that Grindr was owned outside the country. They said, sell it or you lose it. And they sold it. They got the money that they deserve with it if you're into that site. They said they're going to do the same thing here. You're right. I'm going to be skeptical, too, until I can get somebody on the outside to tell me that China's not calling the shots. Because what happens is if you have intellectual property, you cannot sell it, which is going to be problematic to Steve Mnuchin, whoever else wants to buy it. We have to find out. There's other people that are interested in buying it, but if you don't sell the algorithm, you really sold an empty vessel. So they're not allowed to sell all this technology to an American company or an outside company. So there are some issues there, but let's get this thing passed and then let's tackle it. That's what I think anyway. I think it's time to ban it, or sell it off. And we got to, for now on, no more outside companies become a one number one or a top media source or any source. Just can't do it. Sorry. You got to be born here to become president, and you have to be an American company to own a media company. Listen to Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action today. Man, there's a lot of action. I mean, both sides are really ramping up. I mean, the President of the United States has to go to the West Coast. He's got some good news. $53 million he came up with in February. That's real good. Much more than the Republicans and Trump got. And he's going to go out to the West Coast to try to shore up some support that just is wilting away. I'm talking about in California. I'm talking about Nevada. I'm talking about Texas. He's going to Arizona, not California. He's hurting in all three places. I mean, Texas big time. He has no shot at winning that, especially as how he's abused the border. But Arizona, he thought was going to be more and more his. Right now, he's trailing by about four. And Nevada, he has not been leading yet. So before we get, we're going to do a simulcast with Harris Faulkner. Julie Banderas is sitting in, so we'll be live on FNC at the same time being live on Fox Nation and being seen on our app. It's going to be great. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll bring in John Krasher, and we'll give the latest in 2024. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Prime Minister Netanyahu's current coalition remains in power after the war begins to wind down and continues to pursue dangerous and inflammatory policies, then the United States will have no choice but to play a more active role in shaping Israeli policy.
Blowing up on Chuck, Senator Schumer demands for election in Israel has caused massive backlash, given Hamas leverage in the ceasefire hostage talks. Meanwhile, some of his in his party look to defend the indefensible. As President Biden actually waffles again.
Number two. Do you actually believe a forced sale will happen before November?
It absolutely could. It would be in the financial interest of ByteDance's investors to effectuate a forced sale.
TikTok, time for the Senate to step up and announce there's a way forward in the Chinese-owned app on over 170 million American phones. We look at the red-hot issue.
Number one.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole. That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, 2024 explosive weekend as former President Trump takes to the stump, and turns out it's President Biden who explodes behind the scenes that he's losing to him, and his aides don't trust him to speak at all. Their goal, blow up Trump, which they tried to do with those comments. The reason why I played that, and I'll expand it more with Harris Faulkner show, is because they took that statement, obviously in context. He was talking about the car industry. He's talking to Ohioans, many of which are involved in some way to the car industry, many of which have been hurt by Chinese, about to be destroyed by Chinese imports. They're making a massive fleet of electric cars. They're doing some of them in Mexico, and they're going to take advantage of the USMCA and get them here. He said, if I'm president, I'm going to stop that from being here. What is so hard to understand about that? Mike Pence, who spent the weekend saying, I'm not going to vote for it, or not going to endorse Donald Trump, could not let that pass. He says, listen, I have a problem with the president. But he was talking about cars, not talking about a civil war. Cut four.
I woke up this morning seeing online all the discussion about bloodbath. And as you've just reflected, the president was clearly talking about the impact of imports devastating the American automotive industry.
Was so, that clear to you? Because it was a little muddled.
It was. But look, I want people to know, look, the president and I, it was very clear for 4 years, the president and I have different styles.
That's a different style. That's him. Why are you pretending as if you don't know exactly who he is? You know, everyone's got their quirks with their personality. You know, they talked, Barack Obama's too professorial. You know, people didn't like the Texas swagger that George W. Bush had. H.W. was too. They said that he was tough making decisions. They wanted to be more decisive when he made decisions, be more charismatic like Reagan. Bill Clinton, a lack of discipline, but certainly comfortable on his feet. They talked about that. But with this president, he talks in extremes all the time. Number one, he's always selling. You got to drive it. You got to buy. You got to buy. You got to do this. It's the best I've ever seen. That's what he does. And he said it'll be a bloodbath. The car industry will not be protected if you do not vote for me. And he's making some progress with that. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is what's happening on the other side. And it all makes sense. They feel as though their best offense, their only weapon is there's two weapons. There's one's lawfare, going to put indict the president. Number two, it's going to be get the President Trump to talk and then underline controversy. So Joe Biden, evidently, according to NBC, has been blowing up behind the scenes. He's getting frustrated. He's getting frustrated because he can't go out and do what he's supposed to do. He began to shout and swear in January, a lawmaker familiar with this meeting said. He believed he's been doing what was right despite the political fallout. He told the group of his friends, according to the lawmaker asked about the episode, Andrew Bates, that he was blowing up because he feels as though he was right in Ukraine, he was right in Israel, and he's paying a political price. What you and I both know is if that's not the problem. Afghanistan is the problem. Inflation is the problem. His green agenda is the problem. Now, he said this, a second person familiar with the attitude of the president, says he's surrounded by protective aides who want to minimize the chances of a flub. The 81-year-old president has been chafing at restraints that he sees counter to his natural instincts to talk. A third person says he feels like he's in a cocoon at times, has been eager to get out and meet voters face to face and take the fight directly to them. A third says it's a matter he spoke out on the condition of anonymity, of course. He says that the president's private views are one thing. Other people are getting impatient. He says there are signs that some within his own party are also losing patience with him and with his aides. That's why they're attacking Trump. When we come back, we're going to go live on FNC. It's going to be great. We'll talk more about 2024. Then I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move. So glad you're here. It is a beautiful Monday.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. In a matter of moments, they're going to go on FNC. They're running a little bit late, so I have a couple of minutes here. There's a few things going on that I did not make the top three, but I think they're really important. Number one, when it comes to Ukraine aid, it looks like Speaker Johnson's going to roll this out on his own and just get them some aid immediately. I think that's important. In fact, if I'm Donald Trump, I'd want this whole thing off my plate. If I'm going to win the presidency, I'd like to know his finance. I don't have to do anything about it. I would like to, if I'm Johnson, I say, listen, I want these who are going to be the monitors who are going to go along with all the money. I want to find out where all the bullets are going, where all the weapons are going, where all the missiles are going, where all the rockets are going, the Patriot refills. I want to follow that all the way through. And then when the American people ask, is there an audit? You turn around and say, absolutely. This is exactly where everything has gone. I understand, you know, you got to rebuild some hospitals. That is not a waste of time. That is not a waste of money. You have to stand up the economy to a degree. I just don't want to pay for people's pensions. Understood. But if you do this, you have Vladimir Putin who thinks he's going to reconfigure. He says, I am going to redistribute power in the world. He says it's a big power shift away from us because he thinks beating Ukraine beats us. He claims that we're on the ground already and people are speaking French too. So French and the U.S. are on the ground and he's winning. He also says he'll have a nuclear war if not. So we'll discuss that, too. And also we're talking about the TikTok. Will Senator Schumer have the guts to put that on the Senate floor? Will Republicans have the right to vote for it? If those Republicans are out there thinking that Donald Trump is off the ban TikTok bandwagon, I don't think he is. I think he's still for the ban. He also just doesn't want Instagram and Facebook, Meta, Google or anybody else to gain additional real estate. They don't deserve it, especially what they did after the pandemic, especially what they did leading up to the 2020 election with the Zuckerbucks. But to me, the president just has got to be explained to him. This is about China. It's not about social media control and your kids per se. This is about China controlling what your kids see, because nobody uses that app more than kids, 16 to young men and women to 24. And if you want the next generation not to be sullied, you want to make sure that China is not deciding what they're watching. Let's listen in.
At a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government.
Critics are going after Senate Majority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer
for those comments he made just last week. Brian Kilmeade is ready to join me now with his thoughts. Both the White House and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu shutting down Schumer's calls for new elections in Israel.
Because the president understands that that's up to the Israeli people. That's up to the Israeli government that they elect to determine whether and how, if there's going to be new elections, what that would look like.
I think Schumer's statements are wholly inappropriate. I think the only thing that we should be focused on is changing the regime in Gaza, bringing down the terrorist regime of Hamas and not the duly elected government of Israel.
Republicans also had plenty to say.
Schumer called Netanyahu an obstacle to peace. The obstacle to peace is Hamas.
It's laughable to think that Schumer is talking about somebody losing their way.
I think it was embarrassing. You know, there's a way to talk about your differences, not to topple a government in a democratic country. I think, Shannon, it's indicative of now the split in the Democratic Party between the base.
Brian Kilmeade, Fox and Friends co-host and host of the Brian Kilmeade Radio Show and One Nation and every other hour on Fox is joining me now. Hey, Brian, it's great to see you. You know, these were really strong words coming from our top Jewish leader here in America. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has linked Schumer's speech to overseas leaders demanding new U.S. elections after 9/11 and called the comment totally inappropriate. I'd say that is quite the understatement.
Yes, and I don't know what Senator Schumer was doing, but he knows what he was doing. It wasn't someone catching up to him in the hall, Hillary Vaughn catching him up to the hall and saying something that maybe in retrospect he wanted back. You know, he's great at reading right from the page. This is exactly what he wanted to say and the way he wanted to say it. And it had the exact opposite effect because Benny Gantz, right now, who is the number one contender against Prime Minister Netanyahu, came out and condemned Senator Schumer, saying, "We call our own shots." And any time, nations have pride, Julie, and any time an outside source, even if it's the United States, is telling people to call an election, really? Thank you. I'll handle it. We're at war. Day 164 of that war. Number two is this is an outright push to get the Muslim vote, the Palestinian vote, back in his camp. What they should be doing is saying, if you don't like the way I'm running it, Donald Trump is even more pro-Israel. And that's pretty much accurate. And they can't have it both ways. You have Admiral Kirby going, "No, we're not telling you what to do." Yes, you are. And then you have President Biden saying, "You know, it's a really good speech." That means you support it. You can't have it both ways. You're calling for regime change, too. And so is the whole administration. You can't have it both ways. Condemn it or support it. When you don't condemn it, you support it.
Yeah, how about condemning the leaders of Hamas and trying to reorganize their organization, their terrorist organization, and stick to the good guys, our allies. The liberal media, by the way, and many on the left are pouncing on comments by the former President Trump at a rally in Ohio on Saturday. Let's watch.
"Now, we're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected... Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole... That's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. They're building massive factories."
He was talking specifically, obviously, if you have ears, about the auto industry. But the legacy media, well, they're blasting out headline after headline after headline, totally devoid of any context, just letting the word bloodbath hang out there for interpretation. Critics popping off. Elon Musk posting, "This headline is deceptive," as he was referring to the auto industry. Shame on NBC. Another commented, "NBC pushing the bloodbath hoax now." Ohio Senator J.D. Vance was at that rally. Listen.
"Now you have this ridiculous attack on Donald Trump coming out. He was saying that if you allow the Chinese to dominate the EV industry, which is what Biden's policies are promoting, you're going to destroy the auto industry in this country. It's going to be a bloodbath for the auto industry." It shows how low the media is willing to go to cover for Joe Biden. They know that they cannot win this election, so they're just going to lie about him for the next 8 months, which is why it's so important that we have real journalists, why we have X.com, why we push back against this craziness.
It is crazy. The Biden campaign straight up mischaracterizing Trump's comment with a statement. And here I quote, "This is who Donald Trump is, a loser who gets beat by over 7 million votes and then, instead of appealing to a wider mainstream audience, doubles down on his threats of political violence." I mean, this is crazy. NBC, for them to actually tweet that the former President Trump is vowing at a rally that there would be a bloodbath if he's not reelected in November, and then they just leave it there. It's not only deceptive, it's destructive, it's dangerous.
Well, I mean, it's so obvious what he was saying. And what people have to do is understand that Donald Trump, their offense is not going to be Joe Biden on offense because they're afraid to bring him out. And NBC has just confirmed that with the insider source using three separate sources. It says that Joe Biden is frustrated because his people don't want to let him talk. They want Trump to talk. And they want to be able to just clip Trump statements and then say, listen, America, you don't want that guy again. The problem is, it's the 4 years of Trump against the 3.5 years of Biden. That's what's coming through. And when they see that unjustly clipped, that adds to it. Say, listen, we all went to Trump University. So did the entire world. We know the way he talks in extremes. He tries to make everything vivid, and he's talking about the economy, and they're trying to bypass the USMCA in China and make their Chinese cars in Mexico get their discounts on the free trade agreement. That's what he's referring to. And I'll bring it to another area that I think is important. The people that defended Trump wasn't Jim Jordan and Lindsey Graham and J.D. Vance. It was Mike Turner. It was Senator Cassidy who came out. And they were the ones, and Mike Pence, one breath after saying, I'm not going to endorse Trump, he said, of course, bloodbath was meant about the auto industry. So even people that are somewhat skeptical on Trump on the right, who will vote for him, understand what's happening here. In other words, let this whole thing play out. Don't make up phrases. Don't make up points of view. Put it to Donald Trump and then make him defend it. Now the first half hour of every Sunday show is, can you believe what Donald Trump said? Let's welcome a random Republican. We've seen this movie before. It doesn't end well for Democrats.
Yeah, it's to, like, get caught in a lie. Then, you know, take everything that the Biden administration says with a grain of salt. That's the lesson that they are teaching American voters. Brian Kilmeade, great to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, too.
You too.
All right. We got about another minute here left. But when we come back, I'm going to be joined by Josh Kroshaw. I'm going to talk more about 2024. I know you can't get enough of it. The other thing that the Democrats, listen, I don't know if you're coming to me for advice, but if you do and you're independent, undecided, you can't call him Hitler in January and then in May and then say that, he's a fascist and then say bloodbath. He's calling for civil war in March. What is going to be left for you to do in October? We're becoming numb to the accusations. And if you look around at the ratings, people are just in their own corners. What I think Trump's got to do a better job of just finding out what those suburban women want this time, finding out what part of the black community is still hesitant with him, going into the areas that gave him problems in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Arizona, and Georgia, getting your rallies there. But Mr. President, Mr. Former President, you don't have to be Phil Mickelson. You don't have to hit the green off the tee. All you need to do is keep it in the fairway, stay in the game. Because President Biden can't keep up. And we're going to see it. He's in the West Coast this week. He's going to have three straight stops. I don't know if he's going to be available for any of them, but I'm sure you'll see the dip because he's got to be a real candidate now. And even his own staff knows he more than likely can't be. Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
My differences with him are not over style. It's not over language. And as I said before, it's not personal. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, the reason why I won't endorse Donald Trump this year is because I see him departing from the mainstream conservative agenda that has defined the Republican Party over the last 40 years and still has the best hope for the future of the country.
Yeah, that was strange. I thought, anyway, because he doesn't want to cut Social Security or because he has too much spending, I can't endorse him. Mr. Vice President, the reason why you can't endorse him, and I don't blame you, is January 6th, when you kept saying over and over again, I can't do anything, and he did, and you still disagree on it. He said, I'm a Christian, and I forgave him, but I can't get over the fact that he deficit spends. Josh Kroshaw, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider, joins us now. Josh, I really like Mike Pence, but I just don't buy that that's the reason.
Well, Brian, I think it's important to
kind of separate the politics and the substance. We kind of had a similar dynamic in the Republican primary with Nikki Haley running against Donald Trump and Nikki Haley running on entitlement reform and cutting spending and a lot of the same issues that Mike Pence talked about this weekend. And also, you know, bringing up January 6th in a gentle way and bringing up foreign policy disagreements in a gentle way. Haley is where Mike Pence is, and we saw where the Republican Party is during the primaries. So, you know, politically speaking, and look, there's a long list now of Republicans who I would have seen as some of the stars in the party a decade ago, Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, who that's just the beginning of the list, who have not endorsed Donald Trump. And in Mike Pence's case, saying he's not going to do it. So it's kind of remarkable. You rarely see this kind of shift within a party in a relatively short period of time. And yet the party has changed quite dramatically since Trump won the nomination in 2016 and over the last 8 years. You know, substantively, you know, I think, you know, it really depends kind of on what, you know, the issues that you care about the most. I think there are a lot of foreign policy hawks who are very alarmed by some of the comments that Trump has made, not just recently, but over the years since leaving office. You know, obviously, he's not the same type of Paul Ryan kind of entitlement reformer on fiscal. If you care about the budget, if you care about a balanced budget, if you care about cutting spending, Trump is going the other direction. So I understand the substantive disagreements that Mike Pence lays out. But politics-wise, politically, Brian, that's not where the party is, and it's not going to win much of a purchase, certainly not in the Republican primary, but even in a general election, there's only so many voters that are feeling those cross currents like Mike Pence or Nikki Haley.
Right. You know, it was just interesting that I think they tried to get a bunch of people like Mike Rounds, Senator Mike Rounds, who wanted Tim Scott, who Mike Turner, who is a very traditional Republican. They thought, if I book these guys and Senator Cassidy, they'll blow up Trump and I'll have a story. Another three more people that are upset that Trump's comments about a bloodbath is going to be offensive. And all three go, no, that's not what he meant. Mike Pence, one word, I'm not endorsing him. But by the way, that's not what he meant. I mean, should this be a lesson for Democrats? Can you wait for him to make a real mistake as opposed to the one you are portraying that he made?
Yeah, I mean, look, I actually think that's part of the challenge politically for Democrats, where I think Trump has a lot of vulnerabilities. But we learned this in 2016 when he beat Hillary Clinton. They aired so many ads about his temperament and about him being sort of abnormal as a leader and all the things that we often talk about. And you see certainly on a lot of the mainstream media coverage. The problem is, I think the vulnerability for Trump is actually in some of actually digging into the policies and, you know, trying to caricature him as sort of a wealthy guy and maybe doesn't care about the working class interests. Those, if you see, I've talked to a lot of Democratic strategists, and a lot of the people who just focus on the politics get really frustrated when they hear the chatter on cable news, and it's all about what he said at a rally and did he mean bloodbath in this way or that. That is a losing strategy for Democrats. There are ways to go after Trump, but for some reason the party has become so elite and sort of so out of touch with your average kind of blue collar voter, they are very blind to the issue that Trump is potentially vulnerable, and they end up throwing blanks at him in the way they did over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, you know, that you brought it up, when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to Israel, I think the president is pretty strong on Israel. Obviously, his policies are extremely strong on Israel. I don't have any problem with him having a warmer relationship with Saudi Arabia. It never bothered me. It bothered a lot of Republicans. They said, you know, why are you doing that? But with Ukraine, to me, you can't in one breath say Ronald Reagan is my idol. He was the reason why I'm a Republican. And not back Ukraine, because there's no scenario where Ronald Reagan would not back Ukraine. He always saw Russia/Soviet Union as an expansionist enemy that needed to be confronted and beaten, and he did it. So Trump has never said, I look up to you. He always liked Reagan, compared himself to him, but never said he looked up to him. But I find that on a lot of these policy things, Trump is kind of coachable. He looks things in more practical terms once he's in there. But that's why when he came out and said, well, he's spending too much, and now he's reversing himself on TikTok. A lot of that reverse on TikTok is his bitterness towards what's happened in the Twitter files about what was going on behind the scenes with Facebook and others.
But look, by the way, TikTok is a vulnerability. That is something I'm surprised the Biden folks haven't been more aggressive in going after Trump.
They don't know what to do. But Josh,
Biden,
they don't know what to do.
Going on TikTok, right? I mean, he could have had a clean shot, but it's kind of awkward to go after Trump on an issue that is a politically winning issue, I would think, that you're kind of kowtowing to the Chinese and big bit, you know, wealthy donor, you know, whatever, all the baggage that TikTok brings to the table. But Biden was the one who first did a TikTok video, you know, and it kind of makes it hypocritical. So, you know, that was a missed opportunity. I mean, we talked about this on the show recently, Brian, but the State of the Union, I mean, the political playbook for the White House, the three issues that they want to talk about the most, abortion, you heard that in the State of the Union, Ukraine, like you talked about, and it was a little awkward to watch Speaker Johnson sort of clap and not stand up when it was coming to his part of the speech about taking on Putin and not standing with one voice, yeah, against the dictator. And number three, it's January 6th, which you saw some of the divisions in the party over as well. But look, when you end up kind of parsing language that is sort of what makes Trump, a lot of people think that's what makes Trump seem authentic. He's the guy at the bar who just, you know, telling it like he sees it. And when you parse language in the way that a lot of people did in reacting to the rally over the weekend, that is the way to get on a political dead end. And it never really helps the Democrats score political points.
So this is the one thing I would have said to Trump is like, yeah, you're right. Facebook did work. Zuckerbucks did play a role. He put millions to the other side, not to you. I get it. How you felt about your shadow band with the old Twitter owners and Facebook was hindering what you were trying to invest in 2016. You couldn't formulate it in 2020, and you felt as though these major corporations worked against you. The difference is they're American, and they can be reined in. They can be, yep, subjected to our regulation. Listen to a Democrat, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, I always screw that up, but here he is describing why this passed the House and why his bill would actually force an ownership change when it comes to TikTok. Cut 18.
Their CEO has appeared on Capitol Hill repeatedly and made various misrepresentations, Margaret, that have caused members on both sides to really scratch their heads and vote for this bill. I'll just point out two very briefly. One is that he claimed that ByteDance China-based employees never had access to American user data, and that was proven to be false. They repeatedly access it, even unbeknownst to TikTok USA employees. And the second misrepresentation is that he said that this data, American user data, was never used against Americans. That was proven false.
Yeah, and he went on to say one of the members of his board is essentially CEO of the Communist Party. He works with the Communist Party in the government, and he's on the board. So you can't say that China doesn't have their hands on this. They're not, hey, best of luck, ByteDance, making millions. They're there.
Right. Well, Brian, think of the political parallel that I like to kind of bring up in the context of TikTok. Imagine during Reagan's administration, you know, some Soviet company wanted to buy CNN, you know, and they wanted to get a share. And can you imagine the political backlash? Can you imagine, like, how you know, intolerable that would be? It wouldn't even get past, you know, the brainstorming phase. And I think people really underestimate the national security problems. I mean, I think we've gone so far, the toothpaste has come out of the tube, that we're letting the Chinese communists have essentially a propaganda pipeline into the minds and the imaginations of our youngest voters. And you're seeing, I look at the polling data on a whole host of issues. Israel's one of them. The freedom of speech, another one. What's going on campuses, another one. The drop, the disconnect between 18 to 25 year olds and every other older age group is remarkable. And I can't help but think, you know, TikTok is a big part of that, a big part of how young Americans in particular get their news, get their information. And it's anti-American. Often the algorithm feeds a lot of anti-American, anti-Western propaganda. And you're seeing that in the public opinion. You're seeing this radical disconnect between those youngest voters and everyone else in the country.
So what about this NBC report? President Biden was seething in a private meeting back in January when allies of the president told him about the poll numbers in Michigan, Georgia, as well as Arizona, that they dropped significantly, that he's losing to Trump. And he began to shout and swear, the report goes. He believed he'd been doing the right thing. And why is he paying a price at the polls? President Biden makes national security decisions based on the country's national needs, no other factor. Well, you could argue between the Afghanistan disaster, between his slow walking of weapons into Ukraine, and now hedging off his support of Israel, you could say there is a massive indecisiveness. But he also says the people surrounding him are so protective, he's getting frustrated and feels like he's in a cocoon and he can't give interviews and make himself available to the press. Josh, read between the lines here.
Yeah, some of this is actually related to that whole young American disconnect. You know, a lot of the younger staffers in the Biden circle are leaking to the press and trying to put pressure on this White House, especially when it comes to Middle East policy, to, you know, to change course, to be more tough on Israel. We saw that with the State of the Union having some effect. We saw that in Schumer's speech last week having some effect. Now, look, Biden, this White House is in a no-win political situation where their coalition is at odds with each other. The older, you know, older Democrats, moderate Democrats, they're very pro-Israel. They're supportive of mainstream foreign policy. But they're dealing with this young, radical, and in the case of Michigan, an sizable Arab and Muslim community that is totally in the opposite direction, that totally is well out of the political mainstream. So they're trying to pander. They're trying to, you know, seeing these polls that show that young voters won't show up for them. They'll vote third party, that Arab Americans in Dearborn are going to vote maybe even for Trump. And they're panicking. I understand why they're panicking. The other option is even worse. Like, if they basically do a total 180 and they lose both sides, they're not going to be able to win over some of those left-wing voters, those younger voters, probably, and no matter what they do, and then they'd be losing other voters in the middle, independent voters, pro-Israel voters. So they're just panicked. They're trying to pander to different parts of the Democratic coalition. But, you know, the notion of strength, I think, it gets overlooked in this White House. Sometimes, you know, you take a position, you stand up for it, and you give speeches, and you rally the public around your position. That is something on any issue Biden has been utterly unable to do, utterly unable to go to the podium, show some energy, give a strong speech that actually gets people on his side. So instead, what they're doing is basically whispering to different groups and trying to give them a little something and trying to kind of triangulate. But it is blowing up in their face. And that's why the political panic is at a
pretty high point. It's worth saying that it looks like, I think Ben Cardin is older than President Biden. And I watched him over the weekend. Nobody would be talking about age if he was running for – I'm not saying he's presidential timber or wants to be. But you look at him, you go, okay, you know, all right, how old is he? Oh, 81, he's getting up there. All right. You know, but he doesn't act old. You know, he's right on top of it. He's speaking quickly, speaking with authority. He does not hesitate. He moves around fine. So it's not – no one's anti-age 80. Also, look at, obviously, Mick Jagger. You watch the guy still on tour. So nobody thinks that Mick Jagger's too old. You might think so until you watch him. You go, oh, my goodness, what's going on here? Quick note, on the vice president, who everyone's hailing because she went to an abortion clinic, which is great. It makes it seem like abortion's fun and everyone should have one. If that's the angle you want, best of luck with you. But over the weekend in Washington Post, Kathleen Parker called on Kamala Harris to drop out of the 2024 race. It comes down to this. She was picked because she was black and female, a combo tantamount to job security. Now that she has become a burden to the Democratic ticket, Biden can't fire her. He can't risk alienating his base. There's no reason to think that her ranking would spike where they're suddenly promoted to the Oval Office instead. Most signs to a disaster. This is why I propose, with all due respect, that Harris steps away from the ticket. Does this matter?
Well, it shows that, and this is something that's been evident for a while now, but the Democratic Party is the party of identity politics and checking a lot of different boxes as part of their overall coalition. The irony, or maybe the paradox heading into this election, is that African-American voters, Hispanic voters are actually displaying record low enthusiasm. In fact, many of them are leaning towards Trump, and Trump is winning among Hispanics, gaining sizable shares, at least historically, of African-American voters. So there's this big – I think it's a class divide. Harris is appealing to the elites, a lot of the left-wing progressives in the universities, and she's losing a lot of working-class black voters, a lot of working-class Hispanic voters. They don't – abortion is not their top issue. The economy is their top issue, and she's got to be very careful. I understand abortion's a winning issue. They think they have some momentum on that, but if you ignore the economy and the bread and butter issues that a lot of Americans, including working class Americans of all backgrounds, are facing, there's a real tone deafness, a real disconnect that this administration is facing.
Hey, Josh, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.
Josh Krasher, appreciate him coming on. Listen, we come back. I see up there Linda and Bruce. I'll see how many calls I can get through when we return. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show on a beautiful Monday. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The biggest intervening factor between 2020 and 2024 has been inflation. And that has come into effect, and people really feel the impact of that. So unless the Biden team goes directly on the economy and talks about how a second term of President Biden would potentially be better economically than a second term of President Trump, that I think that's the argument that they've got to go to. And I get it. It gets a tough argument to make because most people are inclined to believe that Trump's better on it.
Yeah, that they don't want to hear it. Lonnie Chen, who's with the Hoover Institute, conservative, ran over in California for office, didn't win but got close. Talking about Donald Trump, and they think that abortion will not be the biggest story. It will be the economy. And people say, well, when Donald Trump left, the economy was a mess. We know that you cannot blame Donald Trump for the pandemic. You could actually credit or discredit him for the vaccine. You can't have it both ways, or a million shots in arms before he left. They were trying to figure it out on the fly. And they go, well, look at all the jobs that were lost, and I brought back 15 million jobs. You brought back jobs that were put on hold temporarily until the pandemic was over. And now this news is not good news for Donald Trump. Here we are. The Reuters is reporting Trump has so far been unable to obtain a bond to allow him to appeal his $454 million judgment because of New York civil fraud case. They said he overestimated the value of his properties, even though there was no defendant. One of the quotes from one of his people is, his name is Gary Galletti, an executive with the insurance brokerage of the Lockton Companies, which Trump has hired to help him get a bond. Galletti wrote that a bond for the full $464 million is not possible under the circumstances presented, noting that the sureties would not issue bonds above $100 million and were willing to accept only cash, not real estate, as collateral. So Trump denied a wrongdoing. Everyone is so optimistic on appeal. He's going to do well. But right now, he does not have the money left. So they'll try to grab a property, perhaps. Unbelievable. Total clown show. But it's serious stuff. April 27th, hope to see you in Henderson, Nevada. BrianKilmeade.com. VIP tickets available. It is history, liberty, and laughs. Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.